This is Chris George, working for the Kentucky Civil Rights Project on the movement to end segregation in Kentucky. I'm interviewing today Mrs. Gail Cherry of Princeton, Kentucky. Could you please give me some personal information about yourself?
I'm 54 years old and grew up in Princeton and left for 35 years while my husband was in the Navy when I went to college, and then returned here in 93 to take up residence as retirees.
Where were you educated at?
Western Kentucky, well, Limestone College for Women in Gaffney, South Carolina, and then Western Kentucky University, and received my master's degree from the University of Louisville in 1970.
Do you have any siblings?
I have a half-brother.
Could you give me the name of your parents?
They were Mr. and Ms. Well, Harold Rudd and Dixie Harris Rudd.
You're married?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Who's your husband?
Representing Mike Cherry. And we've been married for 30 years this last year.
Do you have any children?
We have one son who's 19 years old. He's a freshman at Center College in Danville, Kentucky.
Are you involved in any type of community activities?
I'm on the Area Development District Board for my seventh year and president of the Regional Mental Health Board for 4 years, and Foster Care Review Board, Interagency Council. I'm an elder at the Presbyterian Church here, and on the board of Bright Life Farms, and that's probably enough to talk about.
Okay.
More, but I can't remember.
Like I said, primarily what I'm looking at is interested in is the integration of the local school here, from bringing the Dotson students into Caldwell. Could you reflect back on any memories that you have of that time?
Many memories, and all of them positive. I think there was tension, but I think that tension was caused more by us trying to develop something new, something we were not used to, something that had not been done in this county, and for most of us, that meant it was the first time it had been done in our lives.
Were there any people that, you know, encouraged this, that really helped the process along?
When I think back about it, I think almost everyone did, strangely enough, but I don't remember any negative comments from anyone. I think there was concern that it would go smoothly. I think Bill Brown, who was our principal at the time, and Fred Clayton, who was the football coach, were instrumental in helping this to go smoothly.
Okay. Had you, prior to integration, had you had any contact, or were you around other black children?
Well, that's interesting, too. I think maybe my experience was a bit different. My father was chief of police here in town, and I can remember from he used to babysit me at the jail a lot. And not only that, but shall I be really frank about it?
Be very frank.
Well, I think one of the things I remember us going many times up into the black community, and he drank a lot, and so most of the illegal alcohol was a guy named Duke Crider up in the black area of town. And so we were, I don't know, we were in and out. There was a gentleman that was in jail a lot, and his, I called him Uncle, I remember, and we would visit him when he was ill. And my father, I don't remember him ever saying anything derogatory about black people. And I remember witnessing him interacting a lot, and always feeling that he was interacting on an equal level. And so I think I came into this situation with a feeling that everybody was equal.
But you were aware of the differences.
Oh, absolutely. Because, again, the courthouse, there were drinking fountains for blacks and whites. The bathrooms were segregated. The movie theater was segregated. And, of course, the churches were, but that still continues today, because you used to go to church around where you were living and so forth.
Now, in I know in some other areas there were several racist organizations as well as organizations for blacks who wanted to promote integration. Were there any such organizations as the Citizens Council or anything in this area that you've been involved
with? Not that I was ever aware of. I honestly believe that both black and white in this community really wanted this to work out with no incidences of any kind. I think they must have had to feel that way, or there would have been incidences in some way. But I don't remember the parents of any of my friends ever saying anything negative. There was concern, but I think that was as much of not knowing what to expect.
Or are you aware of any type of plans that were put into, I know, you know, for Little Rock they had their phase program to integrate their schools. Were there any such plans or anything on paper to lay out how the process would happen, or did it just happen?
Not that I was aware of. There must have been. And I think my parents' age group, which Mr. Brown was a part of the principal, I'm sure there was a way that they went about doing it. But I don't know what that was, and I don't even know who would know.
Could you recall how segregation in Kentucky was and what was it like?
Well, as I say, yes. It was not uncommon. It depended on, I remember a lot of times the word nigger being used. And sometimes it was used almost as a familiar, almost not as a derogatory term. It was a very, particularly with country people, strangely enough. It was never, it was used like black would be today, in my estimation at the time. And when I look back on it, people who were respected, that word was used for them. It was used as in a derogatory way also. But it seemed to be a thing. But it was never used in my house. And any of my family, we'd never used that term. In integration, and everything was just totally separated. There weren't many restaurants even here then, but of course there was no integration at all.
I know from folklore that one of the things that helped here was the sports.
Absolutely.
Could you expand a little bit on how that really helped?
Well, I think it helped in a thousand ways, but in the initial phase, I think not only, and I think the men were the most interested in sports, but I think they were excited about the potential of our team here because of the integration aspects, because Dotson had a wonderful team. And so I think, in a way, that was probably a very helpful thing with the adults. And as high school students, that was always a big thing for us, too, and it was an exciting thing to watch. And there was a new fire, I think, that came into the teams because the potential was really obvious early on. And everybody was excited about the teams, both basketball and football. And we didn't say, well, we're excited about the white team and the black team. We were excited about the team. And we had such a neat people, the sports people were just great. And I think that Marvin Copeland, how funny he was, and some of the things. When we won the state championship, he was quoted in the Louisville Courier Journal as saying, they asked him how he could get up and get these passes so easily. And he said, and this was a time when deodorant was being on television, was being commercial, a lot of commercials were being made, and there was something about a new deodorant that wasn't sticky, and he said, I'm using that new deodorant that's non-sticky, you know, and just clever things like that all the time that were going on. And you have to look, too, at the people that were integrated into the white school. I can only say now that everyone who came, and is a senior anyway, was an exceptional person. Your mother was a wonderful lady. She continues to be very gracious, very elegant. I think she was the only woman, so I think that was tough. I mean, when you think back, that was a very tough place to be. The men who came, there were five in our class. I guess all but one did white. This is my old age. I can't think. Leslie. I don't remember whether he played ball, but all the rest of them played ball of one kind or the other. They were all beautifully mannered. Of course, all of us were better mannered at that time than a lot of, it seems to me, that people are today. But just an exceptional group of people to begin with.
So you really believe that the fact that all these, there were no troublemakers in the bunch, and that they were all people who just helped the process as well and just kind of fit in very well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really do. When I think about that, I think how exceptional that that happened. The other thing was that the number of people integrated into the broad system were so small that there was no sense of threat to the white community, which could have caused, had it been a large group, of course, then there would have been more agitation. Yeah.
Were you aware of, at the time, I know that in 63, 64 is when it happened in Caldwell, and there have been other areas, especially one that comes to my mind is Sturgis, a few communities over, where they had experienced violence. Were any of those things in your mind as this came about? Was what going to happen? What happened in Little Rock going to happen here? What happened in Sturgis going to happen?
Yeah,
here?
I think all of that was in our mind because we had been saturated. The media had saturated from every aspect with those kinds of experiences. I think that was one of the reasons we were later in integrating people. Yeah, I don't know if that was by design. I'm sure it was by design. I don't know what the rationale for it was, whether it was resistance or whether it was fear or what was going on. But I think there was a concerted effort not to have the same kind of experiences. And they learned probably from those experiences. And when you talk about the possibility of some preparation for this, it would be interesting to talk to people who were in the process, that process, and see how it was prepared, what the thinking was in terms of that.
Were you aware?
I think we were almost, I think a lot of people, a lot of white people felt very badly about what had happened. And a lot of us saw the injustice of it. We were horrified by the kinds of things we were seeing. And that, in some way, us being later, having seen all of the negative that happened, it may have been really good in that we saw what we did not want to happen here and the preparation for it. That helped prepare us for what happened.
Were you aware of anyone that opposed the process that, you know, was very outspoken, I don't want this happening?
No. I think there was a concern, there was a fear about it. Not a fear of the integration itself, but a fear of some incident occurring that would cause a conflagration of some sort. But nobody, I recall, ever saying anything not wanting it.
Speaking of civil rights, who were some of your civil rights heroes?
Well, I was in love with Julian Bond. You have to think, he was a gorgeous young man at the time. This, at the time, still, in some ways, later on, I had an opportunity to know some of the new Black Panthers. And of course, those weren't exactly heroes, but they were in a way, because when I was in graduate school is when all of that occurred. And I had dinner one night, in Chicago with Whitney Young. Oh, and I don't know. We had an opportunity through graduate school to get to know a lot of these people, and of course he was an exceptional man. But at the high school time, we weren't worldly enough. At least I don't remember any quote black heroes or anybody who, Martin Luther King, and I'm not sure the timetable on that even, if he had, he'd emerged at that time, I think.
Well, I know my mom has told me that she really didn't know a lot about the people and the events going on outside of Kentucky. Mm-hmm. Would you say that you were in the same situation, that you just really didn't know what was happening in Mississippi or Alabama?
Yeah, I think at that time, yes. And the other thing is that in a small town, I had been exposed to a lot of black people, mostly older women. My father had some men who were his friends, and I behaved. I mean, they kept
they kept me in line in addition. I mean, they did not work for me, but when I was around, I was always expected to be very respectful of them. And often, I would talk to them. One worked for a friend of mine, and one worked at the country club, and both, I mean, Miss Mamie was terribly supportive of me when I was young, gave me attention when I needed it, slapped me around when I needed it, Lena May, did the same. It would have never occurred to me to say anything other than something respectful to either of those ladies, and so my experience was very positive.
So would you say that your exposure to black people has really broadened the horizons and in a lot of ways helped you live through this experience differently than maybe some you've had in
life? Oh, I think so. And in my life in general, whenever I've had a really bad time, it's always been somebody black who's come to my rescue, because I think there's a depth of understanding of pain and understanding of all kinds of things that we never, that a lot of white people never experience. So I can say in my whole life, it started young and it has continued through my life.
Now, as you went to college, where did you first attend college?
In South Carolina, interestingly enough.
Were there any organizations such as SNCC or SCLC or NAACP on the campus that you were at?
No, I was on it was a very small girls' school, and it was in the home of the town where the Grand Dragon was, the Ku Klux Klan of South Carolina lived. It was a rough mill town in northern South Carolina. But it was like going back 100 years in time, because we'd have these sit-down dinners and the doors would swing open and black men would come in with these big trays all over. And one of the men there was Polish, one of the professors. I would have stayed there because I was going to major in biology at the time. But the headmistress started around town that he was a communist. So it was, and so all these people, you know, were pelting his house with things. It was, you know, it was not only blacks, but it was anybody who was at least, you know, anything they could, I don't know, it was just a strange, strange situation, but I decided I needed to leave there, in total segregation there, much more so than what we were used to here.
So with the Grand Dragon being there, I guess there was a very active Ku Klux Klan organization.
I assume, but I never, you know, I never did run into that. I just remember people saying that that was the case.
And you attended where, sir?
At Western Kentucky University, with one of my classmates from high school.
Now, were there SCLC or SNCC or anything?
Nah, not that. I mean, if it was, but again, I think our classmates were some of the first to integrate sports at Western, if I'm not mistaken.
I do believe the Whitesmith and Clint Haskins were the first to play basketball there.
Basketball, okay. And I doubt there was any football integration prior to that. And of course, Greg was there, and Clint, and they were also outstanding that, again, the same situation where they were treasured, it made integration a lot more easy. But everything was still segregated in terms of sororities and fraternities and so on.
Earlier you mentioned, before we started interviewing, about a local movement here to restore some of the black history. Could you mention that briefly for me?
There is, in our county, there are two facilities. One was a church and school. It was a church and school. The school burned, and the church was used as a school in Fredonia. The other one is the Halleck Chapel School and Church here in Carroll County. Wonderful buildings. And I know some people in the community have been working a long time to try to get these recognized, and that's finally happening. And I think it's going to be wonderful. And we'll tie that in to the tobacco warehouses, because many of the blacks in Fredonia work over, I think, 300 work in tobacco warehouses. I do remember one incident that occurred, which I think is kind of funny if you want to go ahead.
Okay, go ahead.
I think one of the big concerns was that black men were going to run away with white women for some reason or do something drastic. Nobody knew exactly what it was, but one of the young black men, who was, I think, a sophomore at the time, started calling up one of the senior girls. Well, and he even told her who he was, which was really, Now, when I think about it, it was handled beautifully because normally when, and this girl had gone with this guy forever, ended up marrying him. But, and normally what the guys, what the white guys would have done was have a big fight out in the schoolyard. I mean, that's the way these things were settled. But, in this case, two of the black seniors were called into the principal's office, and they were told what the situation was. It was suggested to them that they speak with this young man. And so he did cease and desist, which I thought was interesting when you think back about it, because it was handled in a more mature way than most of this kind of boy-girl situation would have been handled. And I think that gives us an example of how, what an effort there was to keep things calm down. Our senior prom, too, we didn't have a senior prom because it was the concern of the parents was that a black guy would dance with a white girl again. Big deal. But at the time, it was. I mean, it just was not done. And so they had a cabaret for us. And it was wonderful. The teachers, the football coaches had on ballerina. They really put themselves out. It was beautifully done. And they danced. They had ballerina costumes on. I mean, they really made fools of themselves. But we loved it. But they tried in every way to make it as normal as if they could without, and we had a picnic one day at the farm, to make it as without setting it up so that anything could possibly happen. And I think they were probably overcautious. But in a way, it was a good thing for the first year. It set it up so that we got through the first year, nothing drastic happened, so then the next year it was easier, I think, for everybody.
Did the local paper, do you recall any type of coverage in the local paper saying, oh, here, this is coming?
I don't think so, do you? Of course, I don't know that I read the local paper. Was there any?
Yes, it was our small article and the Princeton leader at the time saying that 23 black parents had signed a petition for their children to attend classes in the fall at Caldwell County High School. But other than that, I don't think it was no big deal, you know, no big headlines or anything. If I remember, it was a very small section. And it was just...
That's why I think your suggestion was that they quickly worked out all kinds of things prior to it going on. I'm just not aware of it.
So that tells me that the newspaper wasn't promoting one side or the other. It just said this is happening. Were there, I know in some places they use the churches as messengers to either promote or show their support against integration. Would that be the case in the church you attended at the time?
Oh, Lord, no. I mean, no. We spent $10,000. Our national church contributed $10,000 to the Angela Davis Defense Fund. Now that was quite radical at the time. You don't even remember who Angela Davis was, probably, but you know, we were a very and we're a very liberal church, if you will, anyway, and a very personal, non-judgmental kind of church. So it was not. I do suspect there was probably a lot of interaction between the ministers. See, I don't even know if the black ministers were involved in the ministerial association at that time. I think so. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know that they did do a lot of talking back and forth, but I don't remember any churches coming out again. I just, like I said, I was maybe just deaf and dumb. The whole thing, I don't know.
Could you briefly compare and contrast the way, the attitude in South Carolina, since you went to South Carolina shortly after this and then came back to Kentucky, could you compare and contrast the difference in the attitudes of just general society and the way blacks were treated in Kentucky and maybe the way they were treated in South Carolina?
I didn't come in contact with that many black, strange, interesting enough, black people in South Carolina. I was appalled at the poverty level in the low part of South Carolina, down the low country. I didn't make trips down that way. We had poverty here, but we didn't have anything at all that was that. My roommate, they had a woman that worked for them that had been there for years, and she ruled that roost in many ways. It was a strange thing. They weren't nearly as far along, let me put it that way, as we were up here. I don't think it would be considered integrating the way we did. I think there would have been a tremendous outcry against it.
Were there any books or articles, films, speeches, or anything that has influenced your thinking about race relations?
Oh, not at that time. Now, you know, since then, it would be impossible to even comment on that. because there have been so many. Again, I was a part of the 60s and early 70s when everything was really began to mix up. My best friend was blind, and when I went to work for the first time, Harold and I shared an office. But it was still eerie, kind of traveling around. And then one of the drug rehab guys, Lou Alexander, was he and I traveled a lot, and with the in social work organizations, there's always a lot of black and white mixing up. But it was still kind of iffy to drive around parts of the state with a black man. We used to laugh about it nervously, both the black man and me, if it happened to be. But we were all over the city of Louisville, in the West End and East End, an awful lot of mixing at that point. Things changed drastically in the late 60s and early 70s. In that integration thing, it became commonplace in my estimation. It was a jump. It wasn't a smooth thing. It was a massive move.
Could you, earlier you mentioned that you had then had the opportunity to meet Black Panthers and several civil rights leaders through your travels. Did any of them ever mention, you know, their feelings about how they, why they did what they did and how it affected their thinking?
I mean, it's a no-brainer why they did what they did. Obviously, their courage had been raised by Dr. King's, again, not in high school, but later on, had been raised. They were really angry. And for the first time, they felt safe, I think, in expressing that anger. One of my friends that I shared an office with, Harold Huggins, grew up in New York, and he was the only black family, his family in town. And so he had all of his mannerisms were, if in quotation marks, white, northern. I mean, they were northern. They were, you know, very alien to us down here at all. And he talked so often to me a lot of times about going into restaurants and having to go back and eat in the kitchen, or not being able to find a motel room. And that sounds so bizarre now to people who are listening, but there were no black hotel. I mean, you had to go to a black motel or hotel, and that was something as white people we never thought about. I never thought about it. And it just used to make me cry. They got Harold, who was an elegant, and I'm sure his family was the same, and his brother, and they were all, you know, just exceptional people, and for them to have to go, or anybody to have to go through the kitchen to go sit in the back. And he was just amazed at it. When it first happened to him, he could not understand it, because that had not been the case when he grew up.
Could you recall on the local level the first time that any blacks possibly obtained a political office in the local government?
I can't remember, but I guess, it's been there for a long time, a lot of years and years and years. I don't know who the first one was. I remember when the first women came on the city council, and that preceded, and that was a big deal. My father was mayor at the time, and he asked two women to run on his council. And then, and I can't remember when the first blacks came on, but I know Charles Tinsley, and it seemed like there was somebody, was Benny Miller? Oh, yeah, so a long time back, while I was gone through all those years, but that seems common. And this town is exceptional in a lot of ways like that, in that we all interact, there's a closeness of interaction with a lot of families around here, it seems to me. And the political people, there's always, you know, one of the four magistrates is black, and two of our city councils are black.
Here was a question here. You spoke about the women, so there was some people upset that the women were running for the city council on the city.
Well, it just hadn't been done. It just wasn't it had never been suggested before, you know. And it was only recently we had a woman as a magistrate, the first time, I guess 4 years ago.
Were there any type of women's movements in this town?
Women have always kind of run this town in a behind the scenes way. And I don't know of any, there were some very strong black women's clubs and white women's clubs in this town. And a lot of what was ever done in this town was done because of those women's groups. And they struck fear into the hearts of a lot of political people, I'm telling you. And so I think in that respect, they had their own thing. And they I don't know that they had ever felt that put down in this town.
Okay. Overall, how do you evaluate the success of Kentucky's civil rights struggle from 1930 to 1975? What were some of the successes, maybe some of the failures, and maybe even some things that still need to be accomplished in this area today?
Oh, I think there's a tremendous amount that needs to be accomplished. One is for both black and white youth to understand what happened and to look at how far things have come and to respect the people who, often I've heard them called them times, but that was not the case. I mean, you think what a groundbreaking thing all this was, and you really can't imagine as young people what a tremendous change occurred in a very short period of time, what courage it took to do that. There were a lot of whites involved in that process too. To me, the best times were, as I said, the 60s and 70s. I can remember going into West Louisville and seeing Tina Turner and going to Joe's Palm Room, which was a big jazz place there. It was not uncomfortable at all for blacks and whites to mix all over the place. It was a very dynamic time in Louisville's history, where black history was a big deal. And a lot of really strong civil rights movements, in Louisville in particular, there was one area, Plymouth area, that had a pair of boots hanging over the settlement house door. I never will forget, to symbolize what the white man had, did up. And people were fired, they were militant, they were excited, but it was moving somewhere. And I don't see that kind of thing happening now. It's almost as if we've reached a plateau, and that's about it. I think there is it's more acceptable to in many ways, a lot of things are more acceptable, but I'm for quotas myself.
Well, and I think part of what shows you how close, we all feel very proud in our class. We have a very close high school class. We all feel very proud of the fact that we were the class who integrated. And I think we're still close. I think of the five black people in our class, three have remained very close. Pat, your mom, and Scotty, and Greg Smith have all, we all call and write, and Harry Burntay stays in touch with everybody. And I think that experience of integrating made us that way. I don't think any of the other classes have. Of course, we won the state football championship and went to the quarterfinals in basketball. But I don't think we would be anywhere near this close if we had not gone through that experience together.
Well, I've asked Mom on a couple of occasions, how do you feel knowing that you are part of local history for that? How does that make you feel?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm very proud of it. I have great pride in the fact that we all managed to do it and remain close and set a good example for the classes that came after us. I mean, we really are close. We grieve with each other and we care about each other. And I know good and well it would not have been that way if it hadn't been the integration.
Is there anything else you'd like to mention?
Oh, I could go on forever, but it'd probably be irrelevant. No, I don't. But I think this county was probably an exception to what happened in the other parts of the state. I would be interested to know that and to know how we compared in terms of the fluidity of our integration with others.
Speaking of other areas, a question jumped into my mind. What went on in some of the other counties around here? How soon after did, say, Trigg or Christian, did they integrate, or do you have any idea?
I don't have any idea. We didn't get out of the county much. I mean, interesting enough, I remember a lot of stuff in Christian County, but they always had such a strong black school there that I don't know exactly when they integrated. I don't think it was when we did. We were totally absorbed in ourselves at the time. And I can remember we were exposed, we went to the state tournament, and I remember a lot of black players, Wesley Unsell, for example, was up there when we went to the state tournament. And that's been neat, because the rest of my life, he's been with the Washington, the Bullets, or whatever. I don't know, it was just an opening to all kinds of things. But I don't remember anything specifically about these other tournaments.
I think one of the negative things that happened during integration was the breaking, diluting of the black community. I think a lot of strong men, a lot of strong women were good role models at that time. And I think when integration occurred, a lot of the black institutions maybe that were a part of that strong, segregated black community were diluted when integration occurred.
a lot of the strong code of ethics and so forth and so on. It has eroded in some ways in all of society, but I just hate to see that happen. I think another indication of the way that...